Hey, you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, a program looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host. And today we have a special guest. I'm sort of almost out of my league. This individual actually has a degree in radio and TV broadcasting, along with additional degrees. So I'll be trying to keep up the whole way. She has written extensively and is published all over the internet with topics about spirit and healing and the topic of love and healing in the world. She's even worked as a staff editor for a major publication. Everybody, I would like to introduce you to Rosalie Dunbar. Rosalie, this is everybody.
Hi, everybody. So glad you're here today.
It's nice that we can get them all together all at once, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Rosalie, I was looking, and I'll repeat for everybody, the number of articles you have published, you are amazingly prolific in your writing. But I noticed in lots of the different topics that one word shows up frequently, and that's the word love. Love, a healing light for the world, never beyond the reach of love. I'd love to know what, sorry, bad pun, but I'd love to know what you're actually meaning when you use that word love in these articles as a healing light.
Well, the word love in the Bible is very clearly in 1 John 4:16 declares that God is love, and that association with love is all the way through. Look at Jesus' teachings and the love that he taught people to have and to work with as they're working for healing and so on. So love is a really important message in the Bible and also in the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, who is the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. In 1 John 4:16, the Bible says, God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. And when you live from that perspective, it doesn't mean that your life instantly becomes just, you know, a big love fest, but it means that there's so many things that you can face when you understand that love is with you as God, supporting whatever you're trying to do, and in addressing, sometimes you're in a situation where people are antagonistic. And when you're really praying and just recognizing that love is present right there, right then, it's amazing how things can change for the better. And right now in the situations that we're having in the world, certainly there's a great need for our understanding love better and living it.
You just used a phrase I'm going to paraphrase a little bit to say, coming back and remembering that love is right there, right then. If you were in the midst of a circumstance that had you a bit wound up, how would you break out of that flow of thought and come back to remembering or recalling or being reminded that that which is love is right there, right then?
Oh, well, that's a very, very good question. And the answer is that through prayer. I think every time I find myself getting wound up, you know, at this point at least, I'm pretty good at saying hello and turning to God and saying, you know, what do I need to see here? What do I need to understand about this situation? And many times it really is just love. And I've been involved in very tense situations. And if you can get that idea of love being present, that doesn't mean everything becomes great right at that moment. But gradually, as you persist in praying and insisting that love is there, there can be a change where the heatedness gradually slows down. Sometimes it happens instantly, but sometimes you just have to keep praying and praying and praying until you find that all of a sudden the heat is gone and people are talking to each other normally, or an interaction is happening normally.
Yeah, that ability to remember to step out of the heat of the moment. So would you... Sorry, in my own phrasing, I have phrased that if I make a daily practice of making sure that I come back to my center, prayer, meditation, then it's easier to remember that I have a center in the times when I'm knocked out of it because it's not been that long since I've been there. How would you phrase that? Because I think I just phrased it awkwardly.
And I think you did a fine job. I think that's one way of looking at it. I start my day with prayer, and in my prayer, I insist that God is present every moment of every day, and specifically that day, and that God is controlling and governing my life and my thoughts and my work, and that every situation that I might face, God is present there with me. And that makes a very big difference, because if you put God into your life immediately, then when you go out, there's that reminder that God is here, God is present, and God knows, can guide me to know what to do. And that is, I'll tell you a funny experience. I hope it won't take too long for the program, but this was a zillion years ago. I was doing my doctoral research in Ireland, and I had a rented car, and being an American, I wasn't used to stick shifts. And so I came out of the bed and breakfast where I was, and I was totally blanked on what I should do. So I'm standing there really praying, asking, what is the answer here? And this really nice lady came over, and she said, oh, you look like you're having a problem. And I explained what it was, and she quickly showed me what I needed to do, and we chatted quickly, and she was off, and I was off. Several weeks later, when I finished my research, I was at the total other end of the country at the airport, and there was some kind of problem, which I can't recall now, but, oh, I know, I had a lot of research books and a lot of baggage, and I was concerned about that, but I put all of the stuff on, when I went into where you check in, but all of the stuff to go through the security check and so forth. And I was really concerned, as I said, about the amount of weight that I would have, because back then it was a very big deal. And so I went up to the flight attendant who was looking over the entryway, and I said to her, you know, that I had this. And she said, wait, didn't I just see you? Well, it turned out this was the same woman who had helped me with the car. And she said, oh, don't worry about the luggage. It'll be fine. And so I got all my books home without any difficulty. Now, I couldn't have predicted that that woman would be there. I didn't even know that woman. But because God is love, my problem was solved at the one end and also solved at the other hand by a way that I could have never described or outlined.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, how fabulous. I love that.
So did I.
It's that little reminder sometimes that I give myself, that always step out of the way, because there's a good chance that God is more creative than I am.
Exactly.
One article in particular caught my attention, Rosalie, and I'd love to chat about it. Love, a healing light for the world. Sometimes I can notice that myself or even my clients, there's a frustration about the fact that I don't know what it is that I personally could do. So if you were picturing taking that love and being a conduit, I'll use, to be bringing that healing light for the world, can you describe what you would be focusing on or how you would do that?
Well, the Bible tells us to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And that's what I really try to do. I try to be a healing presence wherever I am, and I'm not saying I'm 100% at that. But whenever I'm in a situation where there's some kind of difficulty, I really do try to pray. And I had an interesting experience in a grocery store parking lot. I was putting my groceries away, and a woman came rushing up to me, and she said, there's a person who said something to me back there, and I'm afraid. Will you help me? And I said, sure. So I just really prayed quietly, and everything was resolved. The person did not come after her. And she waited with me for a while, and then when everything was okay, she went on her way, and I went on my way. And so it's that those little tiny things sometimes that just give you some exercise in praying, but it does really help.
Which leads me to a question that I ask in every one of the Spiritual Perspectives programs, because I always want to know everybody else's experience of this. When you use the word pray, I know as a child I learned some very rote prayers. Now I lay me and Our Father, and they were just rote. The same words, the same way, get through it, and check all the boxes. I don't think that's what you're saying when you use the word pray. What does that word pray mean for you, Rosalie?
Well, I do use the word prayer every day. That's a very large part of my daily prayer. But in each case, I feel that I'm praying really to an intelligence, to divine intelligence, to a presence that is not like a person, but is a divine infinite mind and infinite love that is available to everyone around the world. And as I'm praying, I'm recognizing that this love is present in my life, is governing what I'm doing and what I'm thinking, and that I'm obedient to that love, and that that love goes beyond me to encompass my neighborhood, my home, my world, every single part of the world is somehow under the government of divine love. And I mean, it is actually, to me, under the government of divine love, but I realize that in different places that would be manifest in different ways. But for my own day specifically, I always spend a significant amount of time praying to recognize that God is controlling my thoughts, my actions, my deeds, and lifting me to the highest level that I can be according to my obedience to Him.
And when you're praying, Rosalie, is there a feeling or a sense or a way that you know that you got there?
Well, I think, for one thing, I know that I got there because I believe that God is omnipresent and is omnipresent right now as we're talking. But in terms of actual, like a glow or something, there generally isn't. But I do have that conviction that God is law, that Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, writes of God as divine principle, which to me means that God is law. And not some people think that law is, horrible, strict kind of thing. But it's a law of goodness and of kindness and, yes, of precision and perfection. Just sort of like the airport thing I talked about. And so if you have divine love and divine law with you all day, then that is something that protects you but cheers you as well.
So less of a matter of an internal shift of state, and more of a constant presence in your thought, your background, your flow.
Yes.
So if we're, because you pointed out that sometimes that connection and that prayer to have love change or move things is not necessarily something that changes in the next 2 seconds. You have another article out there that I just love the title of, which was Let God Lead the Way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that this doesn't mean that like, in the movies you get some voice in your head that says, turn left now.
Well, that's true, although sometimes I have gotten messages like that. Yes, I think sometimes progress is a gradual thing, and you just have to be patient and see how things unfold in your life, and sometimes amazing things happen that you could have never expected. And sometimes it turns out to be a very normal transition to whatever it is that you need to do. But if you're really letting God lead the way, and I think one of the big dangers is that you have a human plan in your head and say it has to work out this way, otherwise it's not God. Well, God isn't in a box. God is infinite and infinite love and has infinite answers. And the best answer is the one that's going to come to you as you listen to what God is guiding you to do.
And so I noticed that you've kind of phrased it that this guidance or this connection with God for you has shown up with synchronicities or coincidental experiences. Are there other places where you've seen this as a healing effect?
Yes. I have had many experiences of healing, but this is one that came early in my life as a Christian Scientist. I was born with a defective vertebra in my neck.
Mm.
And my neck would come out of place, basically, and I always would have to go to a chiropractor to get it put back into place. And the medical term is cervical ribs. And so in the early part of my life, before Christian Science, I experienced a great deal of suffering from this condition.
Yeah.
And then after I became a Christian Scientist, I still hadn't connected healing, because to me God was, God. I was an active member of a Christian church, and I knew all about God and all that, so I thought. Christian Scientists had this thing about healing, and so gradually it filtered through my thought that maybe I could pray about this situation. And so I did. And I can't tell you when it happened, but I can tell you that I have not suffered from that problem for at least 50 years.
That's a good success rate.
It seems like it.
So you did not grow up with Christian Science. You found it later.
Yes.
And how did it find you?
Oh, well, all right. I'll tell you the whole story.
Yes, please.
I was an administrator at New York University, and I was getting my PhD in religious education at the time. And I was on the University Christian Foundation board with another person who happened to be a Christian Scientist. And she often said very intelligent things in our meetings and so on. And at the time, I was going through a kind of a challenge with understanding God better. And so one day, I said to her, you know, some question about Christian Science and how she talked about it and how interesting it was. And she said, well, I'll get you a book. And the book she got was Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And I started reading it, again, from an intellectual PhD candidate standpoint. And Mrs. Eddy and I argued quite a bit through that book. But, you know, by the time we were done with the book, I knew she was right. And not long after that, I joined the church in New York City where I was living, and then became active in Christian Science, and I've never looked back. But the thing about the first chapter, of course, is about prayer, but then she goes on to talk about spiritual healing, and your thoughts start to shift to see that man really is spiritual, and that the material issues that come up, such as my situation, are ones that can be transcended by understanding your spiritual nature and then applying it. But it also makes a demand for you to give up things like hate and anger and frustration and all of those things. And sometimes those aren't always easy to give up. Not that I was a hating person, but, you know, there were other things such as frustration and things like that that I needed to overcome. And also to get a wider view of the nature of man. And by man, I mean both men and women, but that we're really spiritual. We're not material beings slugging our way through a material lifeline, but our spiritual ideas of God, who is mind, and that we live and move within divine mind, and learn. And as we learn to yield to that, everything starts to change. Harmony becomes more present, healing becomes easier, and a whole lot of other good things start to happen.
Wow, so many pieces in there that I loved.
I realize I'm going through a lot of things very quickly.
Oh, no, that was wonderful. It's like, gosh, what's my next question? There's so many things I want to ask. So I'd like you to expand on the we're not just some physical, corporeal critter slogging our way through life, dragging a lifetime along behind us. What are you saying when you say we're actually a spiritual being?
Well, I think, I mean, I haven't developed full spirituality because I'm obviously still eating breakfast and all that sort of thing. I think what happens is your perspective changes. Instead of looking at things from, you know, a purely material standpoint, you know, for example, I feel ill, and I'm going to feel ill because everyone says that we're all going to become ill. Well, that doesn't have to be, because we're all spiritual ideas of God. Our nature is spiritual. We're not locked into material forms or material predictions. And, you know, Jesus said that God is love. Excuse me. Jesus said that God is love. And a loving God would not send his children into places that where they would become ill or create conditions that would create sickness or other trouble. The key thing is, of course, that the more obedient we are to God, the more health we can experience. And that's not like God is keeping a checklist up there. It says, well, didn't brush your teeth this morning. But rather that God is, we are at one with God, and to whatever degree we can express love and truth and life and beauty and goodness and kindness toward our fellow man, all of those things are kind of protections that bring us more in harmony with the divine plan. And that sometimes means doing a lot to help somebody. Sometimes it means someone does a lot to help you. But in each case, that's divine love expressing itself in your life and recognizing that more and more and expecting it. Because after a while, you do sort of expect it. That becomes normal, and gradually you become more and more aware of God's presence.
I love that becomes normal part.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Now, I want to jump back to one side comment you made about Christian scientists have this thing about healing. I just like to make sure that I unplug some misconceptions that are out there sometimes. And so I will see stuff in articles or whatever, or conversation that indicates that people believe that Christian Scientists are not allowed to go to a doctor because the church would therefore do something evil or bad to them if they ever used a doctor. So what's the truth about Christian Scientist healing and outside medicine?
Well, I think that people have that feeling, but it's not actually true. The difficulty there, I mean, Christian Scientists are free to do anything. They're free if they wish to have a doctor examine them or to get a diagnosis or whatever. They're free to do that. But the thing is that it's like anything else. If you are working with a particular thought system, you might say, if you deviate from it, you kind of muddy the waters. And sometimes a diagnosis can make things seem very overwhelming, and that makes it harder for you to understand how to become clear about what Christian Science can do. There, Christian Science practitioners can be helpful guides, but if you do choose medical treatment, that's the course you've chosen, and it would be probably better, and I'm saying probably because I don't want to predict for anybody,
yes.
Better to continue with that unless your prayers lead you in a different direction. And many times people do, they get a diagnosis, but then they deal with that through prayer. It's really everybody's individual decision. It's not something like the church will throw you out or that people will come and beat on your door or anything like that. It's really got to be each person's individual decision.
And that's a place where I think sometimes people are speaking from scars they've had in other organizations that had the word church associated to it, where it was that there was one person at the front of the room that was interpreting the message of the religion for everybody in the room and setting the rules, and anybody that broke their rules was going to have horrible things happen. Can you describe how that's different from what you see in a Christian Science church?
Well, definitely. I mean, I can't think of any situation where someone who went the medical route was rejected by the church members or anything like that. I think one of the things that happens when you do go in that direction is the patient, has to work their way back to understanding their spiritual nature and so forth, and being able to live in accord with that. But people do that, and sometimes people do that very quickly because they see the reality of the spiritual nature of things, and it's not an issue. And so each individual really has to make their own decision, and I want to emphasize that there are no one does anything bad to you if you decide to go the medical route or rejects you or anything like that. You know, people have to make their own decisions because it's their lives, and no one would ever want to keep someone from doing something that they thought would protect their life.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the pieces that, as I started to learn about Christian Science, was to find out that there isn't the one minister or whatever, the one person that stands at the front of the room and decrees how everyone should think.
Right.
In fact, that's sort of written into the whole structure of the Christian Science church concept.
Yes, it is. And I think one of the things that is also important is that all of us are at different stages of our experience and knowledge. For example, I know a lot about writing and editing. I know absolutely nothing about hunting animals in Africa. So the point I'm trying to make is that each of us is at our own stage of life, and the truths in the Bible and Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy and her other writings are ones that we're all learning. And things are opening up for me in different areas all the time that I didn't understand before, but I do understand now, and I'm sure that many Christian Scientists, if not all of them, have that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that there was a lot more of a sense when I've been around the organization. There's a lot more of a sense of inviting discussion and sharing concepts than there was one person pounding on the pulpit from the front.
Absolutely. That's why we have Wednesday, well, not why, but one of the things we do have is Wednesday evening testimony meetings where people in the congregation share healings they've had. And many times I've learned something from someone else has said, and others have learned from something I've said. It's kind of a group opportunity to share our journey in learning about Christian Science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Expanding that thought process and connecting into that flow of coincidence and love.
Yes.
So here's one out of another of your articles, which was titled, You Will Always Exist. And I'm just going to borrow the first line of your article. What does it mean to be immortal?
Well.
You're welcome. Do that in 10
yeah,
words or less.
Happy to do that. No problem. I think that if you listen to the standpoint of immortality, it really makes a big difference. In other words, if I were looking ahead to say, you know, when I'm 90, I'm going to die or something like that, where you say the end is inevitable, it's over, that really says, well, I've only got this many years left to do, and I sure better hurry up and do these all these wonderful things I want to do. But if you're looking at life from a standpoint of immortality, then you really know that you'll always be doing something. Life is going to continue in some form or other, and you may not be able to outline it, but you know that there is continual unfolding because relationship is with God. It's not with material life, with all its accomplishments or non-accomplishments, depending. It's really about understanding God and feeling God's love, and you're always going to be learning more about God's love. Whatever happens next will still be a continuity of learning about God's love and seeing how God's love is expressed in whatever that next step is. And when you get accustomed to thinking that way and have had enough experiences, as I have, in coming close to the pearly gates but not going through them, then you really do understand that life is continuing and will continue. And whatever we learn here, we take along with us.
Well, that just led me to an interesting thought that I've never brought up in the show before. Within your belief system and where you are with your understanding of Mary Baker Eddy's teachings, what's the scoop on heaven and hell and get in or don't get in, chosen or not chosen?
Well, I think we can make hell right here on earth pretty easily.
Yes, ma'am.
But what we work out of hell is getting to heaven. And I had an experience when I was working for New York University where particularly horrible. There was a labor dispute with one part of the university. This was a billion years ago. And this affected one of the people who worked for me, and she became extremely aggressive, and it was a very, very difficult, depressing time. And I was really, I can't tell you, I think that's about the most depressed I've been in my whole life.
Wow.
And this was before I was very advanced in Christian Science, but I was studying science, and I just reached a point where I was in total despair, and I actually almost wanted to die just to get away from it. And I had gone on an errand. My work involved going to various departments and so forth, and that particular night I was coming out of a meeting, and I happened to see these beautiful purple flowers across the street. There was some kind of vine or whatever it was. And the light was shining on them in a wonderful way. And I thought, wow, it's the most beautiful flowers I've ever seen. And there was this moment of the darkness lifting for me. And suddenly I sort of was praying about the beauty of the flowers and sort of wishing that I could be just happy all the time. And this thought came to me, you will get out of this, but you must be grateful. And so I decided that that was a message from God. And from that moment on, I became the most grateful person on the planet. I was grateful for paperclips. I was grateful for paper. I was grateful for my computer. I was grateful for file folders. I was grateful for tea to drink at lunchtime. I was grateful for everything. And you know what? I got out of it. The woman who worked for me left, and the department was reorganized, and I was in a much better situation than I had been, and everything was totally taken care of. And at the time when this was going on, I had no idea if I'd even have a job because of the situation and how volatile it had become. But everything was totally taken care of. And I'll tell you, I am still practicing gratitude daily. And I'm grateful for tiny things, big things, it doesn't matter. I'm a grateful person. And anybody who wants to really get out of depression or anger and so forth, start being grateful.
What a beautiful, beautiful practice to describe. And I would underline that it's not a, I'm going to say I'm grateful. It's not a, I'm going to pretend that I'm grateful, but right. It's a find that gratefulness.
Exactly.
For paperclips. I love that. That's going to stay with me.
And you don't have to be a Christian Scientist to do that. I mean, it's not some kind of magic treat here. It's something that will work for everyone.
Absolutely. We have to break away for just a moment to identify our station, and we'll be right back again. So stick around.
Okay.
Talk AM, 1450, just for you.
San Francisco.
Hey, when you hear that music, you know you're hearing an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, where we take a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'd like to take a moment to reintroduce myself. I'm Scout Bartlett, but mostly to show our gratefulness, our appreciation for the First Church of Christ Scientist in Mill Valley, who has sponsored our show today. They would direct all of y'all, if you're finding these ideas interesting, to go in and check out spirituality.com and christianscience.com. And you can even explore with each individual church in your neighborhood as to just how they're offering support during these times when people are not gathering. So this is Spiritual Perspectives, and our guest today is Dr. Rosalie Dunbar. So everybody, this is Rosalie. Rosalie, everybody's back.
Hi there, and welcome back.
We were just talking about an exercise of gratefulness to shift our concepts. And I just lost the question that I was going to go to from that. So another piece that we've been looking at is, you've got another article that's titled, Listening for God's Protective Guidance. We've talked about prayer, and we've talked about you having amazing coincidences, including running into the same helpful person on opposite ends of a country. How do you go about listening for God's protecting guidance, Rosalie?
Well, one of the teachings of Christian Science is that God is mind, and that's not a big human mind, but infinite spiritual mind. And reality is that if you really stop and pray and try to quiet yourself and try to close out, you know, often when you're in trouble, you'd think of all kinds of different solutions, like I could jump off the cliff, or I could stay up here and maybe not have to jump, et cetera, et cetera. But if you can just quiet yourself and really listen for God's guidance, and something, you know, will come to you, and you'll be able to see what to do and what the next step should be. And that isn't always easy, and sometimes emotions run riot and so forth, but to whatever extent you can quiet yourself, that will really help. And you can see, you know, in Jesus' works, for example, I mean, there he is, 5,000 people and 5 loaves. Now, that's a situation where a normal person would say, I think I'm leaving now. But Jesus said, go and distribute the loaves. Well, obviously, it was all 5,000 people were fed. And that wasn't a magic trick. Jesus understood that God is love, and that love would supply every need that those people had. And he simply understood that so clearly that the people were fed, and there was even leftovers. So that's a level of understanding I haven't reached yet. I'm not claiming it. But that is an aspiration where we can see that there is a way forward even when there doesn't seem to be an answer right at hand.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Exactly. And it works.
It's a fascinating fact. So I don't even know how to pose this question, because it's a thing that I work with within myself. There's a physical world, and there's a spiritual world, and then there's this weird phrase that I never know quite where to land it called the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So the real world would say that you had a malformed vertebrae that there was going to be no correction for, other than I know what medicine would do with that, and I'm not going to talk about it. But that turned out that wasn't your real world.
Right.
Is it that we have a real world in a spiritual, call it, template, and that we sometimes get confused and get off track. How do we go from guiding ourselves with our five senses into getting into that deeper sense?
Well, I think what it really is learning who you actually are. I think we all grow up in a material world where, you know, different decisions are made about us, and we make different decisions about ourselves. And so that kind of becomes a mental frame of reference that we take with us, kind of like a turtle has a shell on its back. We carry it around, and nothing penetrates it until we begin to think of ourselves in spiritual terms. And the sooner we think of ourselves in spiritual terms, the better, because then we don't have so much to carry around. But for those of us who aren't practicing Christian Science, you know, there can be a whole lot of issues. And the answer is to step by step understand that that thing you're carrying around is not you. It's not your identity, and it never has been. And the more that you realize that, the clearer you get on that, the more you can drop away things that would suggest that you're something less than perfect, or that you're burdened with a medical or physical condition that you will never be able to get rid of. In my case, you know, that's been, as I said, years and years and years ago, and it has not, it's just gone, period. And part of it is that it's so gone from my thought that I don't even think about it. It's just not there anymore. It's gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a focus on the issue and say, this issue is an issue and it needs to be fixed. This issue is an issue and it needs to be fixed.
Right. It's an issue. It's a focus on God and understanding what God is and therefore what you are. Because God is mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. And each of us is the expression of those qualities of God. And since God is spirit, there can't be a material impediment or some other issue that could keep us from being fully what we are. And all of those different qualities show up. You know, God is love, which means that hatred can't abide in your heart, and all those different things. And I'm not saying it's easy to, you know, get those things out if we really believe in them and have had them for, you know, a long time, or there's something we really feel violently angry about. Each time, though, it demands a spiritual recognition that that is not me. I am not a hateful mortal being. I am God's idea, and I abide in love, and I express love, and I love love, and love loves me.
I found an interesting phrase in another of your articles. You were talking about an awful event in Manchester, England, but the piece that really caught me was that you got a sense of how clear how much comforting was needed, and that as you reached out, your phrase is, I reached out with an earnest desire to help, it struck me that the Latin root of the word comfort means with strength.
Right, comforte.
With strength. I just found that a fascinating thought. So you went on with the internal question of how could I offer strength to people that were in the midst of a disaster that were very far away.
Right. Well, I think that there again, you get it back into what are we thinking and how are we praying? And rather than dwelling on the suffering of the people, recognizing that right there, right at that very moment, God is present with strength. With the strength to give them new ideas about what to do and how to help, and the strength to give the people who are helping them the courage and wisdom to make good decisions, providing for whatever they needed in terms of food or anything else that was required. Each of those things can come with strength. Instead of feeling overwhelmed, the strength of God appears to help and guide and enable people to reach whatever they need to get in order to make the people's lives easier. You know, it could be an inspired moment where you're walking past a building and you see someone there who needs help, who wouldn't have been noticed otherwise. And I think that's one of the things I love about God as mind, because mind does reveal to us sometimes details that we wouldn't have noticed otherwise, but if we're really listening to God's guidance, divine intelligence will lead us to the answers that we need. I have been involved with a small museum, and which is now closed. But during the time when we were establishing it, we had very limited resources, and we were in a situation where we had to do all of the stuff ourselves. And we've managed to get some glass cases. The word strength is what reminded me of this, for the displays in the museum. But when we got them to the museum, we realized that we had to take them up a flight of stairs. They were stone stairs, so they were very sturdy. And I was the one who had to do that.
Oh, boy.
And I will tell you truly that I prayed with God as my strength. I recognize that these cases have been provided for us through our prayers to God for an answer, and that God doesn't cheat us. He doesn't say, oh, I gave you an answer, but now you've got to get them up the stairs, and you can't, ha, ha, ha. God doesn't work that way. God provides everything you need. Well, I am no athlete. I don't lift weights or anything like that, but I got those cases up those stairs and into the museum, and they served as many, many years. So the point is that it's a recognition that the spiritual qualities, whether it's strength, intelligence, joy, you name it, all of those qualities are there and are available to us. We just need to accept that and let God lead the way and provide for us. Now, I hesitate to use the word just because I realize that sometimes it isn't that easy, but that is letting go of personal limitations and thinking, well, I can't do this, so it's not going to happen. That isn't the way. Just really trust. If God leads you down the right road toward what you need, it will be supplied. God doesn't cheat.
And that would be the Top Fun Aviation Toy Museum in Fitchburg, right?
That's right. It's no longer there, but that's what it was, yes.
So it's not just temporarily closed for social distancing. It has completed its lifestyle, its life run.
Right. It's now, our collection has moved to the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire, which is a much better location. It's right near the Manchester Airport, and also it's a better funded museum than ours was.
Oh, how fun. Sorry, I'm a big fan of flying toys, so that had caught my attention.
Oh, yeah, it's like we had a great collection. We had over 4,000 pieces.
My goodness. All right, so I'll ask that question. How did that museum come together?
Well, my best friend...
Because I have a hunch that's going to be an interesting answer.
My best friend was a private pilot at Love Children, and she wanted to increase young people's knowledge of aviation as a career, whether it was flight attendant or piloting or whatever. And over the course of several years, we attended many aviation gatherings. She was a member of Women in Aviation and also of AOPA, which I can't think of what, Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. And so we went to these various meetings, and the need seemed to be for there to be more people to be trained to be pilots and seeking that as a career and so on. And so we gradually came about this idea that if we also, at the time, were also collecting aviation toys, and suddenly one day we got this idea that a museum that featured aviation toys would be a good way to introduce children to aviation as a possible career, whether it was piloting or flight attendants or whatever. And so that's what started the whole journey. And the museum lived for, I think it's about 20 years. I'm not quite sure because it's been a while since I've thought about lifespans, but it was a long time. And we had many, many people go through, and perhaps some of them followed aviation careers, but it was something that we meant to help the aviation industry that way. And we've had all different kinds of programs and so on, and many different opportunities for prayer, as you can well imagine.
And so an idea that sort of came up, sort of hatched itself, coincidentally you started collecting toys, and then the idea came together, and then there was a museum with heavy glass cases.
Right.
I love that dance. I think your life has got to be a fascinating dance between what it was that you planned and what it is that shows up coincidentally to move you forward.
Well, that's one of the things that's great about God. He's not... C.S. Lewis's books about the Chronicles of Narnia, talks about God as not being a tame lion. Aslan is the lion in the books, and it's really a figure for Christ or for God, depending on how you look at it. And he talks about the not being a tame lion. And God is not a tame lion. God is infinite good, infinitely expressing itself in infinite ways. And we just need to keep our eyes open and see where God is leading us. And sometimes we get fixated in wanting it to turn out a certain way when God has actually a much better plan. And we just need to step back, let human will set it aside, and say, Father, what should I be doing? Please guide me. Or something simple like that. And the way will open up. It really will. And when you think about all the hours Jesus spent in prayer, I mean, during his ministry where he was having the issues with people who would like to kill him, people who were desperate for healing, all those different things going on, and the disciples who sometimes were not the brightest bulbs in the pack, all of that was going on, and he spent a lot of time praying and got his guidance from God. And I'm not saying I'm Jesus by any means, but he set the example for us in terms of how we can find our way.
Yeah. Another article title that I really thought, wow, the breadth of material that you've written is spectacular, Rosalie. This one was literally Overcoming Self-Blame. And I admit, I didn't get to read all of these articles. That one I only headlined, but I headlined and went, ooh, I want to ask about this one.
Well, I can't say I remember that one myself, but I think...
Oh, good, I feel better now.
Well, actually, sometimes I come across, I'm doing a search and I come across my articles and I start reading them and I'm like, oh, yeah.
But anyway, wow, this woman's really good. Oh, it was me.
Being serious for a moment, let me get the laughter out of my voice here. I think that people often get drawn into feeling that something went wrong in their life because they did something wrong, and then they spend a lot of time chewing themselves up. And sometimes we do make mistakes. There's no question about that. And I'm admitting that the point is that when we spend time in self-blame, we're really rejecting our identity as God's spiritual ideas. You know, God loves us, and God loves all of us. There's nobody out there who can't be loved. And there are people out there who don't realize that God loves us, and there's some people who would reject the thought that God loves us, but they don't escape. I mean, if you look at the Apostle Paul, who was very, very, very difficult person, I would think, because he was killing Christians, and he had a very adamant sense of what God was, and he was like, yeah, I'm doing it, and I'm doing a good job, and I don't want anybody to bother me with it. And then suddenly one day he's on the road to Damascus, and God says, hi, I just thought I'd drop in. And at that point, Paul comes face to face with God, the real God. And he has a major transformational experience there. And when that happens, what happens is he becomes having been a persecutor of Christians, and hated Christians, wanting to wipe them out, he now becomes the apostle that carries forward the work. And that's a pretty big change of direction, you know? But the result is that, we've all been blessed by it. We've got his works in the Bible and so forth, not to mention the example of his life. And so those kinds of things help to lead us to what is the right thing and enable our lives to continue with a different focus. And once we get past the self-blame, I mean, think what Paul might have thought. Oh, man, all the Christians I killed. Ah! But he just went on. He recognized that God was pointing the way for him. And he had a major change in lifestyle, and he gave everything he had for that. And when you think of all of his adventures and all of the experiences and everything else, you know, he paid back. Just a second. Sorry, but to just repeat that line again. When you think about all the adventures and experiences he had, he really made up for anything that he might have done while he was not understanding God and not realizing the power of God's presence.
It's such an interesting thought about how to break a habit of angry.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be my interpretation. If one is seeing that one needs to be persecuting a group for whatever reason, in my mind, that seems like that's a habit of angry.
Well, and fear. Paul had a very self-righteous understanding of what God was, and he didn't want anybody to do anything that was impure and, you know, degrading his concept of God. But I think anger, and in that respect, anger is often fear more than anything else, where you fear that someone is going to do something that will degrade a situation or in some way injure you, for example, and so on. And that's where, again, being able to be quiet, to go to sort of mentally quiet your thoughts and ask God to give you some guidance on how to deal with this situation can make a big difference. And I realize that this isn't always easy, but to whatever extent that you can insist that divine love is present, you may not feel it, you may not see it right away, but it is present. And because divine love is present, fear and anger cannot be there. Love, the infinite love, which is what God is, wipes out anger and fear. And sometimes that happens in stages. Sometimes it happens right away. I've been in meetings where there was a great deal of tension and anger, and people there were praying, and somehow or other something happened. Somebody suddenly had a funny thought, and people started laughing, or some other thing happened. There was an interruption in the room, and suddenly the whole atmosphere changed. You can't outline how it will happen, but you can expect it to happen if you understand that God is love and God does not include anger or hatred or any of that stuff.
So we've got kind of an interesting overview theme here, because I'm playing with the notion that, okay, I can understand on a huge worldly event that that's important enough for God. I can even understand in a large community event that's important enough for God. I can even get to, in the cases in my own body where things have been awry and needed to come back into a state of healing, that's important enough for God. But we've also got the interesting place that a collection of aviation toys is also important enough for God.
Well, I think God doesn't really know about aviation toys. But the qualities of the toys, the quality of what we were trying to do, I'm going to back up. God doesn't really know about the aviation toys. But the love and cherishing of children is what was behind the museum's existence, and also the love and cherishing of helping people through aviation, that was also another spiritual aspect. I think one of the things that helps a lot is to, in looking at your motives for starting or doing something, is to say, what are the spiritual qualities here that we're cherishing or that we're trying to convey and so forth. And when you, in this case, Jesus loved children, and God loves children, He loves all of His children, including us, but that sense of love for one another, if it's behind your motives, then all kinds of things are possible. And as long as you let that guide it, but if you kind of get into a competition, for example, my museum's bigger than your museum, or something like that, then you're kind of heading down a wacky road. But as long as you keep your spiritual motives pure and clear, that's a path where you can always be sure of God's guidance. And as far as that goes, even if your motives do go wacko, if you're really praying, God will lead you back to what the right thing is.
Perfect. Now, Rosalie, I know at one point you were a chat host. Is there a chat that you currently have that's active?
No, I'm not doing any chats anymore.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to let people know we've been talking with Rosalie E. Dunbar. If you go up online and look for articles that Rosalie has written, you won't have any trouble finding them to be able to follow through further on her thinking. Rosalie, this has been an absolute pleasure. I've been fascinated throughout. I wish we had more time to chat, but thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this has been Spiritual Perspectives. sponsored by a coordinated sponsorship that's coordinated through the First Church of Christ Scientist in Mill Valley. My name is Scout Bartlett. We will archive this show up on our website, which is ifidknownthen.com. It also shows up archived up on the Christian Science website, so we suggest that you look at spirituality.com. With that, I'd like to ask everybody two favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And every time you can notice it, no matter where on earth you are, notice that it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.